It's the Bengal Financial Literacy Show coming up next on KISU FM Radio with our host, Chris Chatwin, professor with the Idaho State University College of Business.
Support for KISU comes from Lookout Credit Union, the Southeast Idaho credit union that has the educational community in mind. It provides financial solutions to ISU students, faculty, staff, alumni, as well as local school district teachers, students, and many others. Lookout Credit Union currently has 2 branches and 7 ATMs on ISU's Pocatello campus for immediate access when required. Lookout Credit Union, formerly ISU Credit Union, continues the legacy of serving the educational community.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Bengal Financial Literacy Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Chatwin. We continue in our discussions. This is becoming just a series here with estate planning, I guess is probably the blanket we put over it. I am your host for the Financial Literacy Podcast, Chris Chatwin. And I have with me once again, Dave Bagley.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's so exciting to be, it's been a long time. Let's talk today about wills and trusts. Does that sound reasonable?
If you can put a Star Wars theme on wills, like...
Oh, man, I'm sure I can. Mara Jade Skywalker is Luke Skywalker's wife. So Mara Jade was the Emperor's hand.
Mind blown, huh?
Yeah, Mara Jade. So we'll talk about Mara Jade.
Because you're actually getting into the books here, right?
Yeah, these are. Okay. Yeah, there's a million books.
I don't know. In terms of wills, trusts, estate planning, et cetera, et cetera... Does Luke have any claim on the assets of Darth Vader once finding out that Darth Vader is his father?
We could get into that whole story. It's just kind of messed up, really, but we don't have to get into it right
okay,
now.
Okay, so let's just play out this scenario.
Okay, Darth and Luke?
Darth, okay.
Darth passes away.
Well, but before he does, right, he realizes, you know, in that pivotal moment, yeah, Empire Strikes Back, time is now. Luke, I am your father. Actually, misquoted, it's no. I am your father. And then he's like, and I actually really love you, and I'm sorry we've been fighting.
It was a beautiful resolution, right?
Yeah. Let's just pretend, though, because I don't know that he, you know, drew up his will.
You know, they don't go into that, do they?
They don't. So let's imagine that he did.
Okay, let's imagine
that
he did.
And you need to tell us all about what wills are and what that would have said.
We're going to talk about Darth's will. So Darth's will, we also have to assume that Darth lives in Idaho. Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine.
The
in
Skywalker
a galaxy
clan lives
real, in real close to where we are right now.
Yes, very much so. And not a long time ago. Because isn't it in a galaxy far away in a time or something?
A long
distance?
Long time ago.
That doesn't sound at all right.
So sure.
I apologize to all the... Yeah, you're going to get a lot of news on that one.
You're going to get a lot of hate mail.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I was totally wrong on whatever that language was about Star Wars. Okay. So if Darth had a will... What he would want to do in his will is he would want to describe how his assets will be distributed upon his death, followed by a backup plan or two.
Okay.
The backup plan is important, right? Providing contingencies.
Yes.
So, for example, Darth's will might say, upon my death, I would like my assets to go to...
Padme.
Oh, you're right. Padme. Okay.
There you
go. So, upon my death, I would like my assets to go to Padme. However, if Padme predeceases me, I would like my assets to be split evenly between Luke and Leia. When did he find out that Leia was his I can't remember that either. Anyway, his will would say, I want to share my assets. You know, if I want them to go to Padme. If Padme's deceased, then I want my assets to be distributed equally to Luke and Leia. Now, that's the first first plan is goes to surviving spouse. But if there is no surviving spouse, the contingency for that is, okay, then I want it to go to wherever. And we're going to say Darth wants it to go to Luke and Leia equally. What if Luke or Leia predeceased Darth, though? That's another contingency, right?
Absolutely.
And so you'd want to plan for that and say, well, if Leia passed away before me, or if Luke or Leia died before me, then their share of the assets would go to their children, which in Leia's case would be Jaina and Jason Solo, I believe, as I recall. So what could end up happening—
I thought it was Kylo Ren or whatever.
Oh, the movies have not followed the books.
Okay.
Which the books are
I have neither really followed the movies and definitely not followed the books.
Oh, the books are so much better.
You just name people and we're all good.
And yeah, you won't even know. Yeah. The books are awesome. So anything by Timothy Zahn, Z-A-H-N, any of his Star Wars books are great. He wrote Heir to the Empire and just a whole there's a whole story about
so what you're saying
Thrawn.
Is
anyway.
George Lucas doesn't know anything about Star Wars.
I'm not saying that. I would never say that. I would just say that the Timothy Zahn books are fabulous.
Okay.
And I wish that the movies would have followed.
So passing to now Darth's grandchildren is that second contingency.
So let's see if we can figure this out. So Padme is predeceased Darth.
Yes.
Also, Leia has predeceased Darth in our example.
In our example.
Darth owns half of the universe, let's say. Half would go to Luke. The other half would go to Leia's children, Jason and Jaina.
Hmm.
If he said that in his will, right?
Yes.
That could be something that he would say in his will. Now, let's say for another example, though, let's say that Jason and Jaina, or let's say Luke and Leia, let's say. Mm-hmm. Let's forget about Jason and Jaina for a minute. Let's just say Darth's children, Luke and Leia. Let's say they're minor children.
Yes.
And Darth is taking care of this when he was actually Anakin and he was younger, okay? And his children are minors. They're under – not minors like –
yeah,
like you know, digging in the ground, but a minor child, a younger than 18. What Darth could say is that, again, when I pass away, everything goes to Padme. But if Padme has died before me, everything gets split equally between Luke and Leia. But if Luke and Leia are under a certain age, like let's say 25 years old or 30 years old, then
so you can set that age.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. And you can say, if that's the case, then I want their share to be held in trust by Obi-Wan Kenobi, let's say. So Obi-Wan will be in charge of Luke's share of the money and Leia's share of the money, can use it for healthcare, for education, for their maintenance and support, you know, buying them little Jedi outfits, you know, and lightsabers and stuff, until they turn, you know, to whatever age it is that Darth decides. So if it's 25 years old or 30 years old, at that point, then Luke would receive his inheritance outright and, you know, it'd be his money.
And do what he wants.
But that's a real...
Fell off your chair there. Everything reverts back to our very first episode together.
To the powers of attorney. Yeah. Thank goodness I do. For you, those of you listening at home, I just about fell over. They shouldn't put wheels on chairs.
No.
And these are kind of an awkward height,
yes,
too. So I had both feet up, and that was a little bit scary. Wow.
Nearly incapacitated.
This is kind of
maybe
awkward.
We should pause the show. You can sign over all powers to me in case anything does happen here in the next little bit.
But we should only sign over
to
that power to people
trust?
We trust.
Oh.
Which, of course, I trust you.
Oh, thank you.
But my wife comes first.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. All right. So that idea of taking care of the kids, if they're minor children, weighs on a lot of parents' minds. You know, what if, you know, if I have minor children, you know, maybe I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, what happens if my wife and I both pass away? What happens?
Mm-hmm.
On the financial side of things, the best thing to do is to set up that type of arrangement that I just described, which would be called a testamentary trust. And it's just included in your will. All the language is in the will. It's all provided for. And you name who's going to be in charge of that for the children. It could be the guardian of the children or not.
So it does not necessarily need to be the guardian.
No, does not need to be the guardian.
The guardian being the person you have asked to take the children in.
Which is a great segue into the next part of this.
Which is hopefully you've asked them.
Yes. So Darth could also say, okay, if Padme and I both pass away while our children are still minor children, what we would like is who's another Star Wars character? Not Jabba the Hutt. You probably wouldn't want Jabba raising your children.
No, I don't think so. All right, C-3PO is taking over.
Okay, we're going to name C-3PO. So Darth, in his will, would say that if my wife and I are both deceased, I name C-3PO as the guardian of my children. And so C-3PO then, what happens is, assuming that, you know, there's no dramatic problems with that, and assuming C-3PO agrees, C-3PO will then be the guardian of the children until they turn 18. And now, some people, like when you think about that, so you're providing for guardianship, someone to take care of the children, and separately you've provided this trust within your will, a testamentary trust, to provide for the financial care of your children. Now, C-3PO could be the trustee of that trust and take care of that money and the kids, or alternatively, you could name a professional fiduciary, like mm-hmm. a bank or a trust company or an accounting firm or something like that to watch over that money and be the trustee, separately from the guardian. Then the guardian would have to work with that trustee in order to gather money or to request funds to pay for
provide for their needs and everything else.
Exactly. Okay. You may ask, before I say what you may ask, I want to say this about guardians and about life insurance. This is super important. So again, for people who are listening at home, this is the time to perk up your ears and listen in earnest. If you set up some kind of an arrangement like that for your children in your will, the bulk of many people's estate is found in life insurance or in a 401k or an IRA. Mm-hmm. Now, IRAs and 401ks are not controlled by a will. So the will controls probate assets like someone's home, their savings account, their checking account, or taxable stock accounts, anything that's in their own name that does not have a beneficiary designation. 401ks, IRAs, life insurance are controlled by the beneficiary designation on file with that financial institution. So let's say that Darth had named Luke and Leia as the beneficiaries on his life insurance. Mm-hmm. But he had set up this will that said if the kids are under
a certain age,
25 years old, they're not going to get everything right away. It's going to be held in trust for them until they, you know, and it can be used for healthcare, education, maintenance, and support and so forth. But they don't have it outright. They don't have control of it, which is the concern, right? The concern is, oh, I die, my life, you know, my life insurance or whatever goes to my kids. They're 18 years old and they have $200,000 and they're going to go blow it.
Yeah,
they're not going to use it for college. They're not going to make good decisions with it. That's the concern that many people have, including, you know, me and my wife and I. We decided, you know, this is the approach we took with our kids as well. So now here's the conundrum or the possible dilemma. Darth's will says that there's this trust for the kids. His life insurance, though, he has named Luke and Leia as individuals as the beneficiaries of the life insurance policy. That money, when he dies, those life insurance funds are going to go to Luke and Leia.
Regardless.
Yeah. Even though the will says that there's supposed to be this trust. So what you have to do is you have to coordinate your life insurance and or your retirement accounts with that trust for the kids while they're minors. And so what you would do is you would say on the life insurance, for example, you would say Darth Vader would have said, I want to name my spouse Padme as the primary beneficiary. The contingent beneficiary will be the testamentary trust established under my last will and testament dated January 1, 2021, established for my children.
Perfect.
Something along those lines, right? And then what would happen is when Darth died, Padme was already deceased. That contingent beneficiary designation kicks in with the life insurance, and the life insurance company cuts a check to the trust for the kids, which is then controlled by, you know, C-3PO or whoever, so that the kids don't get it and blow it.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's something important to consider. Now, you may ask, I was getting to this earlier, you may ask, who should I name to be?
Is it the guardian?
You're thinking, well, I was thinking executive, but let's talk about guardian. You can name so a lot of people feel like they need to name family members to be the guardian of their kids,
mm-hmm.
If they were to pass away. And certainly, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. There's a couple of things I would – and it's hard. Everybody – it's like you said about personal finance. Personal finance is personal.
Right.
Everybody has to make their own decisions with regard to who they name as the guardians of their children in the event that they were to pass away. Typically, I would advise against naming parents – as the guardians of your children. So the grandparents of your children, right? And the reason for that, now if you have to, totally fine, right? You have to do what's right for you. However, the downside is that if for a little child who has lost both parents to untimely death, and then their grandparents step in as their parents now. Well, grandparents are typically older. They mm-hmm. might be more tired. It might be harder for them to provide the care that's necessary, have the energy that's necessary. Also, there's a higher likelihood that they're going to also die.
And that could be significant trauma for those children. A lot of trauma for kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So you could name other family members, siblings. You could name other friends, you know, that you trust.
That close relationship
Absolutely.
With someone.
Now, you had mentioned earlier, Chris, that you may want to talk with them about that beforehand.
Yeah, you might want to make sure they're okay with that.
I think that's probably a great idea.
Probably especially if it's friends or...
Absolutely. Well, I think it's just...
You'd hope your family kind of steps in there.
You hope so. But, yeah. I think it's a good idea always to have that conversation with someone ahead of time. And you should have a backup as well. Mm-hmm. You know, pick someone, and then if they couldn't do it, pick another backup.
Yeah, maybe their life circumstance changes quite a bit, you know.
I think you here's another thing to think about. This might be a little controversial, but it's worth thinking about. Let's say that and it depends on what your assets are, of course, but let's say that you have someone has, you know, $1 million life insurance policy, which is a lot of money, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say they may not have a lot of other assets, but they have $1 million in life insurance and they have minor children. You may think about, and this is, again, why I recommend that you go to an estate planning attorney and have these kinds of discussions with them. You might want to think about the financial circumstances of the potential guardians who are going to get your kids.
Absolutely.
And so if – because here's the potential problem is, you know, both parents pass away. Their kids go to their brother and sister-in-law. Brother and sister-in-law don't have tremendous resources. But now the kids who are now living with them have $1 million in the bank.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a different scenario, right? Now, they have – hopefully it's been set up where there's a trust and, you know, they don't have just willy-nilly control.
Yeah, free will.
But still, they have a lot of money. Now, you might want to think about leaving some of that life insurance, possibly some small percentage, to the guardian – whoever would be named as the guardian of your children. And there's some really specific drafting that has to take place to make that happen. So you have to go to a lawyer to make sure that that gets done right. Mm-hmm. But you might want to think about giving the guardian actually a little bit of money that's just their own.
Yeah,
right?
So
that they can
help
use for their own children. Yeah. If they have their own children, you know, there's some money there available for your kids, you know, for the deceased parents' kids. There's some money in trust for them, and so they're going to get, you know, education paid for them. They're going to have all these things paid for them. But the children of the guardian, the biological children or adopted children or whatever of the guardian, the natural children of the guardian, if they're of modest means, they may not be getting and it can, getting things, and it can create this tension in a family, right?
Yeah.
And so I just think it's worth having that conversation, just to think about with someone that you trust, a financial planner, your attorney, you know, your accountant, whoever. It's worthwhile having that conversation saying, would it be a good idea maybe to do something like this? So anyway, that's something to think about. Now, who might you name as the executor, sorry, of the estate? Someone that you trust and someone that's going to follow the law. That's what I think is really important. So
when you say follow the law, as if like you want to break it or?
No, I think what happens, what I see sometimes is an executor wants to do what they think mom and dad wanted rather than what the will says or what the state law says.
So circumstance, they might think, you know what, things have changed or whatever, or I think I know better.
Exactly.
Or I think I knew them pretty well and this is what they would want.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, the law is what the law is. And if someone has not taken steps to provide for their estate plan prior to their death, it is what it is, right? I mean, the executor should follow what the will says. They should follow what state law tells them to do. And if they don't, they can face potential liability. Now, there's ways to, you know, if circumstances have changed and if all of the heirs are on board with following some different plan, sometimes, a lot of times, you can work that out with, you know, an arrangement between all the parties. There's an Idaho law that provides for that called the Trust and Estate Dispute Resolution Act, TEDRA. And so oftentimes, you know, if you can get everybody on board, you can follow some other kind of plan, but everybody has to be on board. Mm-hmm. The problem arises when an executor just says, no, I know better than what the will says, and I'm not going to follow the terms of the will, or I'm not going to follow the terms of the Idaho Uniform Probate Code intestacy rules. You know, if they died without a will, I'm just going to do what I think should be done. That can lead to a whole lot of
problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
An additional court, things like that.
Fees.
Especially, you know, if those children, you know, maybe it says until they're 25, you know, and if they're, you know, 18, 19, 20, they're, you know, at that point, they kind of know what's going on.
Yeah.
You might have some big legal problems.
Yeah,
there.
It can lead to if you're just not follow you just want to follow I view my role as when I represent executors or trustees, I view my role as an attorney as trying to help keep my client, the executor or the trustee, from being sued. Just trying to keep them out of trouble. So and the way to stay out of trouble is just to do what you're supposed to do. Okay, let's talk about a special kind of special thing that's special.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of a revocable living trust?
I have.
Okay.
Well, but maybe great. Our listeners
then
haven't.
We don't maybe have to talk about it.
Well, you're not talking to me, Dave.
Okay. I forgot we're listening.
You are, but...
Let's talk about revocable living trusts. There are, first of all, a bazillion different types of trusts out there.
Yeah.
Tons.
So many that we wouldn't be able to...
Right. We're not going to be able to talk about all them. So the most basic estate planning type of trust that is on the more sophisticated side of things is called a revocable living trust.
Okay. Break that down.
That needs to be differentiated between or differentiated from irrevocable trust. I'm not talking about irrevocable. Irrevocable trusts are something completely different. We'd have to have a completely different conversation about this. So this is a revocable living trust. The revocable part of that means that the trust can be changed. It can be amended during the person's life who sets it up.
Mm-hmm.
The living part means that it was established while the person setting it up was alive rather than after they had passed away. And that type of trust is a testamentary trust that we talked about before. If the trust comes into being after someone dies, then it's called a testamentary trust. If it's established while someone is alive, it's called a living trust.
Okay.
And so a revocable living trust is the most, again, it's kind of the most basic, sophisticated type of estate planning that you can do. And the reason people use revocable living trust is to avoid probate. And that's really... That's the primary reason that you would use this type of vehicle. And what you do is there's a document drafted. It's a two-part process. There's a document drafted that outlines the trust relationship or the trust arrangement. And there's three parties to that document we'll talk about in a minute. The other part of a revocable living trust is actually funding the trust, which means that you're transferring your home, your savings and checking account, and various other assets into the trust. You're transferring ownership of those assets into the trust. Now, there's some assets you would never transfer ever. You'd never transfer ownership of your 401k or IRA.
Because those have named beneficiaries.
Because they have named beneficiaries. And more importantly, because if you do transfer ownership during your life of your 401k or your IRA, if it's a traditional 401k or IRA, immediately those gains become taxable.
Ah.
And it might be that way with Roth. I'm not sure with a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, but I wouldn't ever transfer the ownership of the actual account.
So the accounts that have named beneficiaries, you name the beneficiaries. But you could you name in that case the trust?
As the beneficiary, yes. You could name the trust as beneficiary, absolutely. So, okay. So there's three roles in a trust. There's the and there's various names for these different roles, but we'll stick with the ones that I use most frequently. The grantor is the person who's establishing the trust.
So this could be me.
Could be you. So Chris and his wife are going to establish a trust. They're the grantors. Now, with a revocable living trust that's used for normal estate planning purposes, you are also going to fill the second role, which is the role of trustee. The trustee is the person who is in whom you are placing your trust. Literally.
I'm going to place it in myself.
Exactly. And you and your wife are going to fill that role. You're the trustees. And the trustee has an obligation to manage and utilize the assets owned by the trust for the beneficiaries of the trust. And you and your wife would be the beneficiaries of the trust as well. And all of that is outlined in the trust document.
So in this capacity, I'm all three of those.
Exactly. Grantor, trustee, beneficiary.
Okay.
Now, you set that document up, you transfer the house into the trust, you transfer your savings and checking account, you transfer, maybe you have a taxable stock account that has $100,000 in it, you transfer that into the trust. You leave out your IRA 401k because you don't want to make those immediately taxable. Although you could name, again, you could name the trust as the beneficiary of those possible. It might make sense to that.
Or like contingent.
Yeah, or as, exactly. And it might or might not make sense to do that. And that would be you'd make that decision in consultation with an attorney or your tax professional or whatnot. Now, here's where the magic comes in. If you've done all that correctly, when you pass away, and again, let's pretend that you and your spouse both passed away 6 months ago.
Okay.
And you've already done all of this planning with a revocable living trust.
Everything was done.
Yep, everything's done and completed. The really nice thing is that you as an individual don't own the assets that otherwise would have had to have been probated.
It's the trust that owns them.
It's the trust that owns them. And the trust has not died. The trust is still alive, so to speak. And you've named backup trustees and backup beneficiaries. The backup beneficiaries are the kids, So you and your wife are gone. You're not the beneficiaries anymore. Now the kids step into that role as beneficiaries.
Gotcha.
You, whoever you, you've named someone to become the, you know, maybe it's Tresco of Idaho. They're a trust company over in Boise. Maybe it's an accounting firm. Maybe it's a bank. You know, U.S. Bank has, they provide trust services, Bank of Idaho, Bank of Commerce. There's various institutions that will offer these services. And so you name, whoever you've named as the trustee in the document just steps into your shoes. And so you avoid entirely the probate process if that's done correctly. Now, sometimes it's not done correctly, and assets are left out of the trust.
Going to probate.
And that's why you should use, you know, someone, a trusted professional who has experience in estate planning, if you're going to go down that road.
Yeah, we might initially think, hey, I'm gonna cut costs. I'm gonna do this cheap. We'll pay for it in the end.
Exactly. Yeah.
It makes sense to consult with someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it, more than anything, you get to play out these scenarios that you might not have imagined or thought about. So.
Exactly. When you sit down with a good estate planning attorney, they should, you know, he or she should talk about all of these things with you and get to know you a little bit.
What ifs.
And yeah, talk about what ifs, and you should feel comfortable with them. So, either in Idaho, I would say wills or trusts are fine. If you lived in California, I would say, or if you own real estate in more than one state, a trust is a really good idea, a revocable living trust, especially California, because you don't want to probate in multiple states. Now, there's an accelerated, or it's called an ancillary probate, where if you, let's say you own real estate in Idaho and in Wyoming, you're going to have to probate in both places, but there's kind of an abbreviated probate process in most states if you've already opened a probate in another state. But still, it's just more hassle, right?
Yeah, and so, I mean, absolutely, you know, kind of on our level here, we're talking of the most basic of things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, once you get into the complicated or a whole lot of assets and things to leave behind.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about, and that. That point, it's even more important to be consulting with someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can run you through those. So
absolutely. So thanks for letting me share my thoughts on that.
I think we've had a lot of fun in this series.
I love it. I hope that you invite me back to talk more about Star Wars.
we're gonna launch the next podcast, and the Star Wars financial literacy, or the Star Wars literacy. I guess I'm gonna have to go read those books
get
on
fun.
Board. But no, thank you, Dave. Appreciate you being on the show. For this mini series that we've done, these three shows now, and I think certainly, we're gonna have opportunities to discuss more things in upcoming shows. But
I wish you well.
And you know, we're talking about some heavy stuff. We're talking about death.
Yeah. The downside, right? If you don't take this seriously, and you don't provide a plan for your loved ones after you've passed away, the consequence, or the potential consequence, is that your family fights with each other. And most people want to try to avoid that. And the way to do that is to do a good estate plan, I think. Or at least try to. You may not always avoid it, because your kids might just fight with each other just because they fight.
Sure.
But you want to reduce the likelihood of that.
So the time is now.
The time is now, absolutely.
And we leave you there.
The Bengal Financial Literacy Show, hosted by ISU's Chris Chatwin, can be heard on the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. here on KISU. You can also hear this or all past episodes of the program at kisu.org/programs.